The Big Red Couch, a podcast about making role-playing games. A group of GMs and players draw ideas from the mystery box and bring their game pitches to you. In which our heroes draw a card.
Welcome, listener, to drawing number 21. We have no idea what it is we're drawing.
Because we haven't drawn it. A card, presumably.
Probably. If we get like a squid cuttlefish out of this box, I would be concerned.
I would too, since I'm the one drawing it, and I think those fuckers have beaks.
They do. Beak, 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 beak. Oh, looks
They've
like cards
been pre-randomised, so.
Well, I have only one card.
You have one card.
All right. Huh. Mainstreaming monsters.
Excellent.
I'm actually really interested to see what comes up with this one, so...
Yep. I'm positive about this one myself.
Especially since, given that the episode will drop on the 21st of December, if people wanted to put a subtle Christmas spin on it, there's nothing to stop them.
Santa is the mainstreamiest monster of all.
Indeed.
See you in a few seconds.
Bye.
Some days later...
So,
should we do this thing?
Idea of the day, mainstreaming monsters.
Yep.
Shall I, or shall someone else, or...
You may as well. Right. You volunteered.
Fine! Okay.
Which episode is this? Does it matter? Not really.
Mainstreaming Monsters, episode 21.
Right.
So
21! The last episode for the year.
Yeah.
The last regular episode for the year. Maybe I should have gotten donuts.
Don't talk about donuts now, dude. I'm starving.
Or you can go and get one of the chicken donuts from the end of the road. And by chicken donuts, listener, I mean a dessert donut that's been cooked in the same oil as they cook the chicken in, because class.
That's fine.
I can stop this so you can go grab a pie.
No, that's fine. I'm good now. Just don't talk about donuts.
Okay. We will instead listen to a bunch of baby birds yelling at their parents.
And parent birds yelling at each other.
Welcome, listener, to episode 21 of The Big Red Couch, Mainstreaming Monsters. On the couches today, we have...
Ben.
Craig.
Kim.
And Tonya, who's got ideas that they want to share with
us. Several ideas. But who? I don't mind whether I go first or not.
You just put up your hand.
Yeah, I did. I just wanted to be creepy. I didn't realize there were going to be consequences. Okay, fine. Well, I'll go through the idea that I came up with most recently, because Craig was doing research in the car when we went to go pick up.
I was looking up the definition of a word.
Yes, but he gave me an idea. So I'll go through that first before the original idea that I had. And what was the definition of the word?
You want me to look it up again?
Yes. Well, okay. But the whole definition of mainstreaming was the idea of, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, or when you get to your idea that I'm stealing, having classes where people who are developmentally disabled or other people who have previously been shoved into other educational ghettos have better outcomes if they're taught alongside everybody else on the grounds that it makes people more familiar with them and everything else. And so I immediately leapt to Monsters and Other Childish Things and thought about a school where you've got the kids of monsters and monsters in the same class, and everyone actually knows about that.
So you basically have a setup where the monsters have their own desks next to their child.
Yes!
That sounds like a bad plan.
Yes! You see the idea!
And the last Monsters and Other Childish Things character I made up was a giant bug who likes to hide in mirrors, who had impulse control problems. Things like leaning out the car window to say, Edgar! You know your clothes are moth-eaten!
Yes. And had the terrible hairy eyeball.
That was a different character.
That was a different character, yep. But yes, it just occurred to me that so much of the basic drama of Monsters and Other Childish Things involves monsters not quite getting people in society. And so if someone, after the third smoking crater of Tokyo 3, etc., said, maybe we should work on that. And so the kids at school have monsters. We should try to actually socialize the dangerous little rat bags. And that was pretty much the entire core of that idea.
When you say dangerous little rat bags, who exactly are you referring to?
I think they think you're talking about the kids. But it does lead to a situation where you're trying to teach a variety of monsters quadratic equations, which I really can't see going well.
I think the monsters won't be in every class in the same capacity. I suspect that PE would be somewhere where you herd the kids and the monsters apart, because things are likely to get really exciting.
I like the
playing
idea
dodgeball with something that can throw balls of flame is probably going to be bad.
Well, yes, but if they learn, then there's been a really detective predictable outcome. I also like the idea of a phys ed class where all of the monsters are wearing giant-sized, modified versions of the same shitty PE uniforms as all the rest of the students, because it appeals to me, and everyone hates it and doesn't want to be there. And also, you know, you've got the occasional circumstance of a monster who has gone, "Behold, your puny maths is unto nothing and due to the chaos of the universe. Notice as I pull forth the veil and break physics." And then winds up being stood in the corner thinking about what they've done. That would be entertaining to me, because I'm easily amused.
I'm definitely envisioning sort of like a Monsters, Inc., but with people kind of thing.
Having
at least the monsters I'm picturing are slightly fuzzier, possibly, than most of the monsters and other childish things. You'd play it for laughs.
I tend to play everything for laughs.
I know.
Whether or not I should. But that was the first minor idea of just a context that generates its own stories, as we've seen, and fun would ensue. The initial idea that I had was stolen from Midsummer Murders, that most racist of UK shows until it was changed, and the guy who created it got fired. Crime show set in the countryside in Britain. I can't remember where. I don't think it was
Rural Shire.
Rural Shire, thank you. Yes, that's not going to get us in trouble with our listener at all. And with a rural police officer who, instead of Coppina Cop's daughter...
That was the Coppina Cop's daughter, Chicago cop in San Francisco for some reason.
For Alcatraz. Yes, this would be Rural Copson or something, I don't know. Anyway, he's annoying. But the show had an episode where it was talking about this little village that was specifically set up to take prisoners from the prison and reintegrate them into society, so that you've got this kind of midway point where they are under prison authority, they still have to check in, but it's also you interface with the rest of the world. You need to actually have a job and pay rent and you cook for yourself and all that sort of thing. And the idea that sprung off for me was having a mixed facility where you've got something that's designed to do that for human prisoners as well as for supernatural prisoners, of reintegrating them back into society and kind of being the last port of call before a hardcore supernatural prison. And
what sorts of supernatural are we talking here?
Vampires, red caps, werewolves, witches, greebles of all sorts from wide kinds of mythology who have committed crimes and infractions.
Okay.
But otherwise...
Monsters of myth, legend, and silver screen.
Yeah.
Right.
But who have been sufficiently model prisoners that they're being considered for kind of an...
catch and release.
I was going to say outpatient, except that's really not the same thing.
Reintegration?
No. Reintegration thing, yeah. Except you've also got this kind of doubled thing of the rest of the prisoners who are integrating the rest of society. Maybe I don't want to be flirting with the vampire. And so you've got this kind of whole tension going on. And so the players will be playing monsters of myth, legend, and silver screen, who are trying to play nice and do right and various other things. And at this facility, there is a murder that seems to have been done by something supernatural. So you've got basically this thing where people are trying to investigate what happened in order to prove their own innocence so that they don't get sent away, probably permanently.
And maybe the entire scheme is experimental or threatened with closure. And
exactly.
Yeah, and they could lose their opportunity to get the stepping stone into a better life.
Yeah. And this kind of whole concept with exactly that the whole scheme was kind of now under pressure because you've got the completely normal civilians who weren't necessarily that pleased about there being a prison outpatient thing on their doorstep anyway, let alone with Gribbles involved. This was an idea I was planning on playing around with in a short story at some point as well.
Well, it's an interesting background for a game because you have the opportunity for some fairly hard-case humans cheek by jowl with Larry the werewolf. And everybody's trying to prove who did this, because otherwise everyone's going back inside.
Yeah, and you've got scenarios where you could have some seriously hardcore dangerous people in the same facility as Reginald the Barrow White, who had a little bit of a accounting problem, but has been sent to the really hardcore facility because he's a Barrow White.
All I did was fiddle a book.
Yes!
Is he a white-collar criminal?
I hadn't done that on purpose, ladies and gentlemen. I apologise in advance.
Ben can stop doing the booyah dance now.
I mean, one of the bits I always like the idea of in the story that I have planned is the idea of this short, barrel-shaped gentleman argumentative, completely the opposite of the modern view of the glittery vampire, basically muttering to himself, I didn't come here to get treated different. I didn't get sent here to be people staring at me and be afraid. And somebody else kind of cutting in, well, I shouldn't have knocked over all those chemist shops, should you?
Not so sparkly.
Not so sparkly, no. No. And the idea of, yes, you can be a supernatural criminal. That doesn't mean that you're a super criminal. That just means that you can be a criminal idiot who happens to be a vampire or something else.
I also like the it reminds me a little of the Discworld Nightwatch. Yeah, so that the monsters are not nearly as monstrous as some of the people.
Yeah.
And, you know, a sufficiently dedicated and nasty human being, you know, because to some degree the folklore, the vulnerabilities of these creatures are going to be well known. Mm. If they're going to the point of trying to reintegrate into society, they are going to be just another minority. The rather unusual one.
Yeah.
And they have to deal with that and having really weird restrictions on their lifestyle and things like that.
Mm.
And yeah, the tension of that could be really, really awesome. I like that idea a lot.
Cool.
I think that would be really quite... It'd be the oddest prison drama ever. But
I think it's the only circumstance in which I could be willing to pitch a game. You know, everyone's prisoners! And have it actually be remotely entertaining, because I don't tend to do grimdark misery unless it's a terrible accident.
Actually, this is the first thing that I've heard pitched in a while that I would be comfortable playing with a slightly crunchier system than I've been used to recently, she says. Because it seems like the sort of thing that might actually benefit from a little more numbery structure than say, Spirit of the Century or Fae would.
That's true. I mean, it is a system where hit locations might actually be relevant and kind of hit the vibe, so we can...
Millennium's End it is!
Quiet in the box.
That might be a little too crunchy.
But something like the One-Roll Engine. One-Roll Engine is frame three nemesis, because then you've got the madness meters of the possibility of somebody does something by accident and spooks people, and that could be one of the mundanes as much as anything else.
Yeah,
that might do it.
Hardened and failed notches. One of the most successful games I've run with Nemesis and the Madness Meters that I really liked was where one of the players got really quite upset and was saying, it's unreasonable. People keep looking at us weird and treating us differently. Oh, wait, this is because of all that stuff we did. Yeah. And kind of answered his own question, because it's one of those systems where something terrible happens and all of the PCs completely fail to react or be spooked in any way, whereas the normal people are screaming and hiding under tables. And that itself sets them apart as being weird and scary.
Hmm.
So that could be fun.
When you're running it.
I will add it to the list.
Okay.
I didn't trample on your ideas too badly.
I think so, no.
Good.
I kind of like the prison one.
Good. I don't know if it's a prison, like, does it, like,
halfway house sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Halfway village. There's a experimental thing that I heard of in Norway where there's a village on an island. So it's still high security, but you have these people who are otherwise would never see the sun training to have a normal life.
Yeah.
They get to have a normal life if they do okay here.
It also crosses over with if people going on to the registered sex offenders list in America for a huge variety of things.
Because it's broken. Okay, that's rant for another time.
Have restrictions about where they can live. They can't live in some distance of schools and things like that. They wind up getting restricted to all the same places. There's like little trailer parks and things like that. It was the only place in a county where they could live, because all of the circles around places they're not supposed to be
overlap
to such a degree.
There's a place in Florida where the only place they can live is under a motorway bridge.
Wow.
Yep. And people have looked at that system and said, that's legit!
Wow, 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 wow.
Anyway, moving away from the grim realities back to game versions of it, another tension in the game that might be fun to deal with is that you've got people trying to prove their own innocence. You've also got possibly other people in the same boat who were thinking to themselves, this is a total fit-up.
Yeah.
There is no way we're not going to get blamed for this. There is no way the program isn't going to get shut down and we're never going to see the sun again, which means we have no motivation not to do something right horrible to whoever actually got us into this mess.
Yeah.
Or stage that breakout that, you know, they wouldn't be considering otherwise.
Yeah.
Now's the time.
All sorts of mess that you could wrangle.
Yeah.
So that actually starts to look a little...
campaign-y.
Slightly longer campaign.
Yeah.
Mm.
There's all kinds of fires you can put out.
Yeah.
Assuming you're actually going to put out any of those fires.
Depends on the player group, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I've got something if we're...
Go ahead.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Actually, I've got the first half of something, because I also started with schools, sort of thinking of a situation where, over a period of time, D&D creatures start turning up in conventional world. And it occurred to me that you would have... If you're staying at the kid level, you would have these schools where, in slightly poorer areas, you've got skeletons and gnolls and goblins and...
Do you like this cube?
They don't really have kids, so they don't really need educating.
That's just prejudice.
Well, okay, gelatinous cube children.
Woo!
Cheek by jowl with the kids of the area.
His little backwards cap's dissolving on the inside.
Okay, sorry.
Okay, so we know what character you're playing.
Yes!
Dude bro cube.
Yeah, and in the slightly more affluent areas, you'll have the kids whose parents managed to come through with pockets full of gold and gems, so the dwarves and the kobolds.
The vampires and the liches and the...
Yeah.
The dragons.
And the dragons, yeah. Holy shit, dragonette kids. That would be an interesting class.
I would pick their team for dodgeball.
Yeah. Anyway, again, cheek by jowl with humans, and it would completely reshuffle the lines of... who hangs out with who, based on who managed to come through with money, who's going to the same schools as who, as opposed to in the D&D world, where elves don't really hang out with kobolds much, or gnomes, but their parents will have come through with sticks and leaves. Woo! on the assumption that magic doesn't work.
Interesting.
Yeah. Or some kid comes to show and tell with their pet mimic.
I'm just imagining a gelatinous cube playing dodgeball.
Splotch. Yeah, you hit me. Come get the ball.
At that point, it counts as a catch, so I'm imagining the ball hits this cube. It disappears inside. There's a ball, then a boom! Ball flies out parallel to floor and punches a hole in the block wall directly beside somebody.
I mean, either that, we kind of embrace the Warburton accounting style of comedy. It's kind of, great, I've got it! Now what do I do? This ball becoming sizzle.
a gelatinous cube trying out for the basketball team.
Cubes can't jump, man. Everybody knows that.
Next week, football.
Make a great defender.
Yeah. He's not our fastest running back, but on the other hand, he is very difficult to take down.
Greek wrestling.
Awesome.
Yeah. Or hockey goalie.
Any again, goalie. Come get the puck.
This would be cool.
So, yeah, that's as much of an idea as I got. The social ramifications changing that greatly.
Well, I'm thinking that system-wise,
mm-hmm.
I'd be looking at either TFOS, Teenagers from Outer Space.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Or School Days.
Yep.
Mm. It would work for either of those. If,
okay.
That's if you were going the comedic variant, which, let's face it, we all did.
Yeah.
Fate Accelerated would work.
Yeah.
Because at that point, it doesn't approaches. Matter whether you're a limbless blob of acid. What matters is whether you're solving problems cleverly or forcefully.
Which is hard for a skelly kid to do.
I'm still trying to imagine what happens when somebody crash tackles a gelatinous cube. I mean, do they just
a
go
valuable learning experience is had by everybody.
Yes. I'm not sure how many classes you'd have for slimes, molds, and oozes, but...
Well, I'm also imagining an Umber Hulk in helmet and pads.
Yep.
Yeah. We're playing against West Valley. That's going to be tough. Yeah, they've got a teenage storm giant on the team. How bad's it looking? Well, he's 12 feet tall and weighs as much as 3 Buicks. Yeah, we're on.
Playing 3 positions, all of them blockers.
There's an anthology of short fiction called Zombies, the Recent Dead, and I can't remember the name of the story. I'll see if I can put it in the show notes, but there's this whole bureaucratic cock-up where a kid gets sent to Purgatory High. And
he's a live kid.
A live kid, because right. He shares the same name as a spirit in Purgatory who comes back as a zombie, and they kind of are forced to switch. And uh-huh. Everyone looks at the situation and says, that's legit. And there's these repeated football games, and they get ruined every single time. Who are we playing this week? Forces of Hell. Dang! Who are we playing next week? Forces of Heaven. Dang! Twice!
Oh dear.
Yeah. Also the story which gave the world Roland the gangster fetus. So it was comedically weird.
So I'm assuming show notes for Roland the...
Yeah.
Does anybody else have a particular Warren Zevon song in their head right now?
No. No, we don't.
Yes, you do.
And so does our listener, who now blames Craig.
I'll see if I can find a link.
Only if we put it in the show notes and tell them which one it is. I suspect those what? Of them.
Why are you all looking at me like that?
So yeah, that was my idea.
That's a really good idea. Because, I mean, it actually takes various elements of D&D's based lunacy and actually says, what would happen with this?
Yeah, because alignments only count in D&D world.
Yeah.
You get here, none of it matters.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, I was just thinking that kind of arranging critters based on, well, capital.
their treasure letter.
Yeah.
The treasure
basically.
Class.
Yeah.
Rather than anything else, well, being me, I would immediately start using that to throw glasses at the rest of society. But, oh, hey, wow, the vampires and other such things are gravitating to the top. Who knew? But anyway.
I like the idea that it could be based on practical skills. It's like, well, the elves are suddenly landscaping. And, you know.
Or anyone with a few ranks in druid.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I don't think the elves are going to have a problem, because basically it means that elf genes from Calvin Klein are going to become in forever, and yeah, all sorts of modelling contracts. But anyway, I'm getting sidetracked again.
I was just wondering about a Monster Hearts / Apocalypse World hack, if you wanted to go less comedic with that idea.
Would it counter an apocalypse?
Well, Monster Hearts, as I recall, is built using the Apocalypse World engine.
Oh, right, okay, yeah.
It is effectively Twilight, the role-playing game.
Only with a bit more fucked up.
Yeah, all the mythical creatures are effectively reflections of toxic personality archetypes, especially in teenagers.
Yeah, okay.
And it sounds fascinating, though it may not be this particular group's cup of tea.
But it is yours, right?
I find it intriguing, definitely.
Yes, because it's grim and miserable.
I find it that I think it would explore
grim misery.
Shut up, you! I think it'd be an interesting exploration of yeah, failure scenarios, basically.
That is a really neat idea.
Yes, and yeah, the definitely Monster Hearts was something I was considering as a background for stuff. One of the ideas I came up with was doing a little bit of research earlier, was integration into normal schooling, again, the same sort of thing, of psychic teenagers.
Oh, okay.
And I immediately went to The Tomorrow People, which they have remade this year.
Is it awesome?
Okay, now we have to put some context around this. The original late 70s, early 80s Tomorrow People was made in England and was bizarre. And had some of the most traumatic sort of credits on opening sequences that we've ever seen.
At a very low budget.
Oh, yeah. The budget was pretty Doctor Who of the era.
When you say traumatic opening sequence, what do we mean?
It is a lot of blobby lava lamp effects, flashing images, like eyes in the middle of hands and flower petals and all sorts of kaleidoscopic kind of crap and some very
bad trip psychedelic.
Yeah.
So I wasn't sure if you meant traumatically bad in terms of low budget crap or actually containing
Column A, Column B. Yeah. Definitely a bit of both. And they have some very odd outro music on top of that as well. And yeah, it was the exploration of Homo Superior, hiding out from humanity, and possibly defeating Reptile Hitler.
I remember that one.
Yeah.
Yes, I remember the defeating cryogenically preserved shape-shifting reptile Hitler.
I'm not super certain he was a reptile, but he was green.
Hmm.
Okay, so this really is Sapphire and Steel for kids. Sort of.
Yeah, a little bit. It was the image of the Hitler's shape-shifting face melting will be with me for the rest of my life. So yeah.
Wait, so this is a show that acknowledges an innately Superman subcategory of humanity,
yep,
and yet doesn't like Hitler.
Because he was bad.
It's okay, it's my problem.
You'd have an even bigger problem with, I think it's John, who is the ringleader. They have a super sentient telepathic computer who teleports them around and so forth. You know,
they can teleport themselves, but only over very short distances.
Yeah, and the computer's name wasn't Zen, because that was Blaze.
Tim, I think.
Could be. And the computer was a bit supercilious, but the leader, I think it was John, was the most annoying, priggish asshole ever. He was just so aggravating.
It makes sense that he would be in charge, though, because he sounds like the sort of person who would nominate himself to be in charge.
He's like publicly schooled and the oldest. He was like a whole the War of 18 or something like that.
Ooh.
Yeah, yeah, it's like,
he was the first one.
He was such an idiot.
So being homo superior gives you what?
Telepathy, telekinesis, the ability to use this teleportation equipment. Uh-huh. And a few other, you know, general psychic things.
Okay.
Which PCs would immediately use to murder anyone in their way.
And they also had a biker. I remember a character for a while who was a bit of a lad, non-homo superior.
Regular, all right.
Yeah.
So they had a pet human.
They had a pet human who occasionally did some useful things.
It's okay, Kevin. It's fine.
You can't not do a class-based analysis of this show. Hey, it's making me cry.
The kids in question were multicultural, though Kenny's diction did let him down a lot. It could be the basis of a drinking game. It was quite terrible.
Anyway,
where is Kenny from this week?
Yeah, and he was very deliberately, the character very deliberately had a urban accent, an urban patois or way of speaking. It was just a bit clumsy. It was almost as clumsy as John's upper crust one. So,
right.
Yeah, so it was all a bit over the place. The actual thing I remember was it was either a policeman or a parking warden or something, someone who was kind of their comedic foil, who was trying to track them down. Of course, they kept teleporting. He couldn't find them. And it came to the point where his obsession got to the point that he was publicly dressed down and had his rank insignia torn off him in public in front of like a couple of random school kids because he had taken it so far. And it's like, yeah, so they mocked the establishment in that way. Okay, so that's a huge nostalgia trip that no one wanted. it has been rebooted as Sexy Modern American Teens.
Okay.
But looks to be self-aware enough not to be total shit. That's just from viewing a trailer. So it's like, okay. And the special effects actually have special on them.
Special effects are cheaper now.
Oh, they are. They very much are.
Anyway, so how does this get to your idea?
Okay, the notion that psychic abilities are known of, not well understood, but they are being integrated into society like people with, say, developmental disabilities were in like the 80s and so forth. So they're actually sort of, and working around the conflicts of that, the idea that these folks are known to be different. They're a clear minority, but there is fear and distrust around them.
Okay. So it would be like, as far as the other kids were concerned, there's a gang in school. These people might be dangerous to us.
To a degree, they initially wouldn't be that organised, but I'm sure being PCs, they would form a gang pretty quickly.
So just in self-defense.
Yeah, to a degree, absolutely. Yeah. There would be a thing about that. It would be kind of like a strange Grange Hill.
Yes, okay.
Massive opportunity for a reopening of old wounds in the players here. That is not my motivation at all. That is a caveat that we need to be aware of. But the idea of working with the social context of doing the normal, there are a lot of video games that do you're doing a normal school thing, plus you fight monsters. I think Persona is one of that sort of, is that sort of genre. I haven't had a chance to play it, but that sort of thing happens as well. The idea that there are undoubtedly shadowy conspiracies in the corners and so forth.
Okay, so the players are the psychic kids.
I believe so. I think that would be the most.
And you're adding a thing where every once in a while they get pulled out of class to go fight a thing, or the game is part of every day.
I think there would be, to a degree, they would have experience of another world apart from the other thing, and they would probably come to realize either in self-defense or to the pursuit of some greater goal, they would need part of their homework or part of their extracurricular activities would be to use their psychic powers to do this sort of thing. So that would be the
adventure. To do which sort of thing, sorry?
To pursue a conspiracy or to resolve a problem.
Right, okay, cool. Sorry, I missed that.
Like, Buffy would be another inspiration.
No. Yeah, very much a Buffy-esque sort of game.
It does bring me to mind the spoilers. Episode of Buffy where she gains telepathic powers and realizes there is somebody looking to perpetrate a massacre at the school and is trying to figure out who.
Yeah.
That would be interesting. Yeah. So the idea would be looking at the interplay between, say, pro and anti factions. It would possibly be a bit of a Little Rock story on some level.
I don't know what that is.
Little Rock, Arkansas, one of the first school in that state to be integrated.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, maybe or a little.
X-Men High would be another kind of...
Yeah.
I don't know if that's actually a thing, but in terms of...
There are aspects of Xavier's school for the gifted, but not just them.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there are options there. So
Xavier's school for absolutely everybody, including but not limited to
mutants and so forth. Yeah. And it might. The idea of your straight psychic powers, the ones that are mysterious and hidden but definitely threatening, would be different from people wandering around in capes. So,
okay.
Yeah. So it's that.
So everybody knows that there are people with psychic powers, mm-hmm. but not necessarily who has them.
Though that sort of thing would get around.
True. If you are a person in this world mm-hmm. with psychic powers, do you have a full suite, or do you get like one big, one little, or something?
Yeah, it might be that you have a specialization in a couple of minors ones as well. Maybe there is a typical brain mutant package, and you exaggerate some things and are not as good as others.
Okay.
So that was sort of the first thing I came up with. I also asked my lovely wife what she thought, because we were sitting in a car for the moment, and she came up with a really mental idea, which I loved. Basically, she said, reality TV show. I said, Big Brother. She said, no, something like Dancing with the Stars or America's Got Talent.
Oh, interesting.
Effectively, a reality TV show talent competition for the next big horror icon.
Ooh.
So the idea that you are...
So more live streaming monsters.
It might, yeah. Yeah. So it's like... This is just thinking mainstream as mainstream entertainment, mainstream television, something like that. So bringing another monster into the pantheon of horror icons.
Interesting.
And the thing I immediately thought of was you have the MGM monsters as the judges, and you've got Wolfman Simon Cowell.
That's not fair. I like the Wolfman.
You really can't picture him sitting at the end of the bench going, yes, well... It's definitely new, but is it scary?
I don't want to associate him with that twat.
So, yeah, the idea that you... I don't know how you'd run it as a game particularly, but the notion of having people on stage in front of lights attempting to become the next Freddy Krueger or the next Jason Voorhees or something like that would be pretty hilarious.
Yeah. In terms of how you turn it into a game... There's a couple of different ways I can think of going with it. One of them is the players are the judges and basically are simultaneously trying to achieve a kind of goal while not getting murdered.
Mm-hmm.
Or two, this is the background context for there is a show, this is a thing that's happening, and again, murder mystery.
Yep.
Okay. Whereas I was thinking something slightly different where rather than having people applying to be considered as the next Jason Voorhees, you have a group of judges going out in the wild and somebody has nominated a friend of theirs or has nominated somebody in the neighbourhood. The
judges scout.
Sneaking through the underbrush with shaky cam and low light and say, let's see how scary this guy really is. So it's part David Attenborough, part...
Queer Eye for the Straight Guy.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah, creepy eye for the undead guy kind of territory.
Yes! I would play the crap out of that game.
Yeah, because that way you've got kind of a Monster of the Week thing where your crew are helping to, I don't know, out-rehabilitate and make truly scary this one person.
That would be fantastic. While avoiding arrest on stalking charges and all sorts of other things. That would be fantastic.
But
whereas I'm just imagining somebody running down the road being chased by the Boris Karloff, Frankenstein, Wolfman, Dracula, maybe the Mummy, being chased down a road all the while screaming, I'm not a monster! I've just got a really hairy back! Leave me alone!
My only problem with that thing is that the inevitable lesson will be, but all along, reality television was the monster.
Well, yeah, yes, we knew that.
Yeah, that's just provably true.
Yeah, but you'd have to come to that, you'd have to say that at some point. It would be mandatory.
I think that's how you close out the game. Yeah, you're probably going to have to knock together a bit of a custom bodge system for this. So I think that's the way you close it out, where at the end of the session, all of the players will just sort of turn towards the GM and say, and in the end, reality television was the monster all along.
If we were doing a fake thing, that could be a campaign aspect.
What, reality television is the monster? Is the real monster,
yeah. Because that way people can use it as a lever whenever it will be funny. And whenever the GM wants to pull on that lever, people get fake points.
I'm really getting the feeling of a show that opens, here's Billy from Bournemouth. He skins people and wears them like clothes. Watches our team of judges make him cry. It's like following these people around who are trying their best to be the most genuinely horrific things possible and destroying them with public attention.
I mean, there's that. Or there's the idea that these are people who've been nominated by their friends who are not interested, do not want to be involved.
Even worse.
And are being followed around by reality TV paparazzo trying to persuade them to come around.
Yeah.
Who could be the next big thing? I don't want to be the next big thing. I'm going to shift at Kinko's in 3 hours. Fuck off!
Yeah.
Awesome.
Like how the most interesting episodes of Queer Eye for the Straight Guy is where somebody is really polite and listens to all sorts of suggestions and then says, no thank you, get out. That does happen from time to time.
There's the door.
And the other possibility I was thinking, going back to the talent show thing, you have a setup where it's something like, and Rick, who are you going to be tonight, Rick? I'm going to be the Candyman! Slides out of the tunnel.
Oh, that would be awesome. That's even better. Stars in their eyes, monster edition.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, there's so many different angles you could take. You could have people volunteering themselves who aren't actually monsters but are convinced they are and who may be catastrophically dangerous.
Okay, squirrel lady, show us what you've got.
Or alternatively, I wasn't even thinking that. I was thinking just random, knife-happy, crazy person who's convinced he's a vampire. He can tell this because he drinks blood.
Yes, Nicolas Cage, Kiss of the Vampire.
Yeah.
Yes.
So the flip side of Nightbreed / Cabal, with the guy who's utterly convinced that he's one of the monsters.
A short section has been cut here because of loud engine noises.
It'll be back. True aggravation never really dies.
I could just stuff a spud in his tailpipe.
Also one for the car.
Give me a minute. Anyway.
We don't have a plunger, so we don't really have the right sort of stick.
Anyway.
I'm glad other people were amused and inspired as much as that idea.
The stars in their eyes. Yes.
We have another guest contributor. That's cool.
Mm.
The Big Red Couch would like to thank Dee for her wonderful idea.
Well, I may be letting the side down on the comedy front on this one.
Are you bringing the tone down?
I am.
That's really his job.
Yeah. I know. It's dreadful. It's a terrible, terrible thing. Because I only just realised this while people were talking. I've managed to take mainstreaming monsters and combined it with some elements of the book of The Postman.
Okay.
Pray,
listener,
continue.
You should see the look I am being given here.
This is the look that says, I have no idea where you're going with that.
But it is going to ruin your acting career.
That's true.
I was going to say, so wait, you've taken the idea and you've adapted it really badly by Kevin Costner. Where are we going with this?
I liked that film.
It was not the film of the book, though.
No, it was not the film of the book, but I did quite like the film.
Fair enough.
I know it makes me a bad person.
Well, it could be a reasonable film. It's not a terrible adaptation.
And I like the Simpsons version of it as well.
Oh, come on. You like Field of Dreams, right? Come on.
Yeah, a continual shot of somebody walking a donkey through the desert and the Kevin Costner saying, I don't know what I was... Oh, Field of Dreams was good.
Wasn't he actually standing behind the television?
Yeah. At least he'd go and get an orange Julius. Okay, what I started with was take your standard stereotypical Middle Ages D&D setting, right?
Woo! I thought you were going to say fat beard, but oh well. Yep.
Yep, it can be run by the absolutely stock standard Middle Ages D&D fat beard if you like, but the setting's the important bit here.
I'm imagining somebody coming through the clouds like with Monty Python, except you've got this horrific stereotype.
So, comic book guy from The Simpsons.
Yeah.
Cheeto dust twinkling. All right, let's get up.
Okay. I've actually got two different ways of running it, and because Tonya kind of touched on the idea, I'm going to go with the flip version of it.
Okay.
And this is taking the idea that you've got your standard Middle Ages-ish D&D world, and lying underneath the surface you've got dungeons.
Uh-huh.
And they seem to go down forever.
Okay.
Well, possibly what you've got is, if you've got a world that's a sphere, the outer coating is where the humans live, and all of the rest of the interior is where the monsters live.
That would tend to imply there's a lot more monsters than there are light-dwelling creatures.
Indeed. I mean, it could be the other way around. You could have an interesting topology where what you have of worlds is these little bubbles in a sea of dungeon. But in this case, you've got a kingdom or area that is coming under attack.
Mm-hmm.
This is on the surface. Humans or, you know, other non-human but not deep monster races
attacking this area.
Surface dwellers.
Surface dwellers. Surface dwellers attacking other surface dwellers. And in desperation, because they have nowhere else to go and no other options, they head into the dungeons.
Okay.
On the grounds that, well, they know the dungeons are dangerous, but it's still a better option than the surface right now. And much as in the shtick of, you know, people wandering into a dungeon, finding the wandering monster ready room, and becoming part of the dungeon economy essentially by taking a number and waiting,
mm-hmm.
you've got, you know, maybe it's only a village, maybe it's a handful of villages, maybe it's an entire small kingdom or principality or whatever,
mm-hmm.
have moved into the dungeon and are basically becoming part of that underground world.
Okay, so this is this version of things where they are just moving in side by side with the goblins and cave spiders, or are they, have they displaced the dungeon ecology further down?
I think what they've done is they've moved into the dungeon, they've moved into the bits that have already been picked over and there's really not a lot in there.
Uh-huh.
They realise they have nowhere to go upwards.
Mm-hmm.
And so they've moved downwards. And they're starting and trying to become part of that community. In this context, the surface dwellers are the monsters. Because from the point of view of the guys in the dungeon, the monsters are the guys who come down, destroy their traps, kill their guards, nick their shit.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure how it works. If it was the case of, you know, a small village, so you've got 20 or 30 people, then possibly they turn up there, maybe they have some skirmishes with whoever the hell is living in those caverns,
mm-hmm.
and find a place to live. But maybe it's bigger than that. Maybe you've got...
an entire city.
Yeah, an entire city and surrounding farmland. So basically that...
wow.
That sort of Middle Ages agricultural and industrial and physical support unit, for want of a better term, and I really need a better term, you know, that whole structure that allows all of those people to exist, having to move underground for whatever reason, and having to find a new place to live, having to...
find a new way to live because you can't farm the same way.
Yeah, yeah. Hammer out agreements. Learn how to farm the high-protein funguses of the Dark Elves.
Tell me about the foodstuffs of your home, of your homeland, Ymir. You wouldn't understand. It's mostly complex carbohydrates.
Oh my god, it's an unidentified random encounter! Yeah, so that was my idea. In this case, the mainstreaming is a bunch of dungeon monsters, in this case, dungeon dwellers, and a bunch of surface monsters attempting to figure out how on earth to get along.
Nice!
Hmm.
It's attempting to make a new mainstream with folks who don't normally live in a dungeon environment. That's interesting. Who would your players be?
It would depend. If the threat from the surface still exists,
mm-hmm.
then possibly I would put the players as an even mix of dungeon folk
uh-huh.
and surface monsters, very much placed on guard and overwatch.
Okay.
So it's a little bit... what was that video game?
Dungeon Keeper?
Dungeon Keeper, or Dungeon Monster's Guide, in that you are restocking the traps, you are clearing out the bodies... you are possibly just engaging in mammoth acts of masonry to just brick up the damn thing.
Okay.
You're trying to keep them out. If you were going with a much more socially sort of game, and I'm not certain on what the system would be, Apocalypse World is probably not a good choice because that does have the things fall apart, the center cannot hold, bar forth Apocalyptica, but something that could handle social stuff, could handle situations going awry with the... even though nobody's particularly pushing it in that direction.
Okay.
You know, effectively a system, to borrow some terminology from, I think, the Jank cast, somewhere where you can set up a system where various players and groups of players are aimed at each other.
Interesting. That's starting to sound a bit Rain-like.
Yeah.
Company rules.
Because depending on whether you've got an entire city and support structure, I mean, a village, probably not going to make that much of a dent, but a few thousand people, or tens of thousands of people moving into the dungeons...
stuff's going to get stressed.
Yeah, that's going to apply some pressure. You could do worse than having the party as some element of city watch.
Okay.
Just trying to keep a lid on this. Trying to keep the hotheads who think, well, we need this space and they're dungeon monsters, so we should just displace them and take all their shit, who don't really see that, no, we'll get waffle stomped so fast that the flagstones will be looking down at us.
Also, they're differently shaped people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so playing creatures that normally live underground, as opposed to the creatures who've just moved there.
A mix of the two would be fun, because I wonder whether something like Dogs in the Vineyard...
There is a game that I've heard a little bit called The Quiet Year. They describe it as a map-making game, where the players don't play characters, they they effectively play a community.
Oh, interesting.
And the idea is that the quiet year is a year is a set of seasons, and play continues by seasons, set after a big transformative apocalypse kind of thing, which sounds like it, entirely possible it could be moving downstairs would count as that.
Yeah, it would.
Yeah,
and in that case, you might have people playing, sort of one person playing the gentry, one person playing the field hands, one person playing
Marxist revolutionary.
I was going to say above ground city watch.
Ah. I think it also may play with gender roles quite a bit, which might be something that's a bit interesting in that one. So that would be worth investigating if that was a sort of thing.
That's a neat idea.
Mm.
Yeah. I'd like to know more about that one, actually.
I'll certainly kind of find out.
I had an idea that I was reminded of from Tonya's concept about people from the dungeon moving into the world.
Yeah.
And that it's not my idea, it's one that I heard of, and that I knew somebody who was involved in a game connected in some way to Planescape, where you had all sorts of different realms and planes and worlds connected in a particular place. I think the city was Sigil, the city of doors where everyone goes through. And everyone was playing basically customs officials.
Mm.
One of the plot lines was that you had vampires from all these different dimensions and worlds who frequently, they were people who had been bitten by a vampire and survived.
Uh-huh.
That was it. They were victims, really.
Mm.
Who were extensively vulnerable to sunlight and had all sorts of restrictions and were vulnerable to silver and other such shenanigans through no fault of their own, except it was they were vulnerable to sunlight and silver of their home
plane.
Star, their home plane. So they move somewhere else and they can actually get on with having a normal life. And so there was this whole organization keeping an eye on these people, of setting them up with new lives, new identities, and then someone starts kicking the table and a vampire has moved somewhere where they're much harder to kill and is doing the full evil vampire thing, and it's their job to put the boot on that right quick.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, actually, that's very much mainstreaming monsters.
Mm.
Moving people to where they won't be harmed.
Where they can just live in the day.
Actually, trusting that they will not use the full suite of their new abilities.
Well, yeah. Yes. And there's a whole background that happened off stage in that game of profiling people to make sure that they weren't going to go megalomaniacal on you, except clearly something didn't work.
Okay.
And this kind of investigative thing of trying to fix this problem that you've in part caused. But again, a little bit like the one with the prison, the whole idea that if the wider program gets shut down, that's going to cause
problems
a lot of
suffering. For everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. You said you had another idea, Craig? Or?
Well, the other idea was really just the flip side of that, which is assume you have still that same surface world, dungeons beneath situation. Mm-hmm. Something is occurring, possibly in the dungeon world, possibly in the human world, and you end up with some level of alliance between the dungeon folk and the surface folk, essentially the monsters coming up to the surface.
Okay.
And living there, and basically trying to integrate into this stereotypical Middle Ages environment.
So, same deal, but
same deal,
come up
but,
rather than people go down.
Yeah, yeah, but reversed.
I just had a weird thought. This would connect with, I think, your idea for the last episode we did, the Goblin Paradise thing, the idea of the Amish. No, it was Taz's idea, with an Amish settlement and society into which goblins appear, except rather than playing the goblins, playing the people in the settlement. And so you've got goblins turning up, and they're not deliberately destructive. They're trying to help, trying to be part of what's going on, but there are also several hundred goblins. And from what you can tell,
how much trouble can they do? They don't weigh much more than a cat.
Yes.
He.
In talking to them, they're perfectly happy to talk about it. They're the first group who found the way out.
Right.
Yes. Okay, we're having a lot of trouble raising these barns because we only weigh about as much as a cat. And even with 700 of us, well, that's still a problem. But don't worry, the cave trolls will be here soon.
What?
Boom, boom, boom.
I was thinking more about the idea of even if we just keep it, the cave troll idea at school. I was thinking that even if we just kept it to goblins, the idea of goblins trying to help out, but without really getting it. So that you've got goblins that are very carefully following the signs and behaviours they can figure out from observation of what it is to be Amish, at the same time as saying, well, we've noticed that you are having some issues with territory, so we moved all the boundary markers, so now you've got more places to farm! Oh, no. And being part of the centre of the Goblin Amish invasion of Pennsylvania.
I'm imagining the whole thing of, we noticed that there were some people in town who were saying very unkind things about you. Yeah, that happens. Well, it won't happen any longer.
Why?
We'd rather not say.
Or even if they hadn't done anything by their stakes violent. They know that violence is a very bad idea. Using dominate person to turn them into farmhands, they might not strike them as an issue.
Wow. Yes, I'd forgotten that was an option.
A I'm just imagining the whole thing of a couple of Amish folk being really creeped out by this entire town where everybody's smiling and overly nice. Sort of rictus of glee on their faces at all times.
Because they know if they don't, somebody will charm the beasts of the forest to come and glower at them again.
I was thinking it the other way. Possibly the goblins thought that things would be a lot easier if the people in town were just a little bit nicer.
So they made them nicer.
Yes.
From definition of nice, of what goblins can understand seen from the outside, smiling is involved.
Being polite and helpful is involved.
Hmm.
Sometimes shop discount is involved.
Awesome. That means we've got, what, 6, maybe 7 ideas between us?
Something like that.
I stole my other one, but yeah.
And there may be one coming in later from Gulo T.
Awesome. So this was wildly successful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this one, I think, I can't remember whether we mentioned at the start of the show, is probably our last regular episode of the year.
Indeed, this one will drop on the 21st of December, so the next one will drop on the 4th of January, which takes us into our second calendar year as a podcast.
Dum dum dum!
I should have got the sound effect ready ahead of time. Yeah, fine. You did a good job.
You could sub it in.
Absolutely. That's what editing is for.
It's true.
He was doing the hands of giddy thing.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that's us.
Yeah.
I think we've juiced all sorts of ideas.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us, folks. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
See ya.
Next time on the Big Red Couch.
This is particularly appropriate for me as the owner of the tea-drinking trousers on the bio. Operation Chocolate Teapot, the untold story.
Oh my god.
Enjoy, guys.
Want to hear more of our shenanigans? Then go to horde.net and click on the button that looks like a couch. The Big Red Couch is released under Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 3.0 Unported from creativecommons.org. All music on the show comes from the album Universal Fluff Theory by Krakatoa. Visit them at krakatoa.com or follow the link from our page. See you next time.